Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, our top story is the federal trial date that's been set for former President Donald Trump on charges of conspiracy to influence the outcome of the 2020 election. And he'll be going on trial in Washington, D.C. in the federal case just one day before the Super Tuesday primary election next March, in which he is a candidate. Hear the judge's rationale on our show today. In more courtroom drama, former El Cajon councilman Ben Colosio and his wife Jessica have been found guilty of criminal contempt of court, and a judge has ordered them to jail for failing to turn over their financial records after a settlement in a civil defamation case filed by El Cajon attorney Lena Chari. In Lemon Grove, Mayor Raquel Vasquez delivered her State of the Lemon address. Redo. In Lemon Grove, Mayor Raquel Vasquez delivered her State of the City address and will have highlights of recent accomplishments. SDG&E has been piloting a new virtual power plant aimed at keeping power flowing to the grid to prevent outages during high heat. We'll tell you the results of that pilot program in Shelter Valley right here in East County on our show today. We'll also have some tips on how to prepare for power outages and what to do if the lights go out on today's show. Alpine Sanctuary and Farm has a new organic garden, and it's open to the public. Then on Destination East County, hear about festivals and events coming up across our inland region, from Native American powwows to Borrego's Desert Days Festival, concerts, and more. From Public News Service, we'll have some national news stories, including the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington for Civil Rights, and how young climate activists are pushing state legislatures to make protections from the impacts of climate change a right for all residents. Applications are now available for a federal program announced by President Joe Biden to restructure student loans and forgive some of them, and we'll have details. El Cajon has ambitious plans it's considering for a new event called Market Nights, combining a farmer's market with live music, a beer garden, and more. With Halloween on the horizon, today on Bookshelf we'll be re-airing our interview with Raina Menashe, our longtime Bookshelf host and author of The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake, a haunting read. Election integrity advocates are speaking against a proposal to legalize betting on elections. Plus, we'll have the latest on a court ruling that could outlaw a key abortion drug nationwide. So, stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. The first criminal trial against former President Donald Trump has been scheduled to begin on March 4, 2024. That's in the middle of the primary season, just one day before Super Tuesday. Trump, now the leading candidate for the GOP's 2024 presidential nomination, has pleaded not guilty to the four federal charges of election interference. He is the only named defendant in this case, which lists four unindicted co-conspirators. The indictment lists four charges: conspiracy to defraud the United States, in other words, conspiring with others to change the outcome of the 2020 presidential election; conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, that's the certification of votes by Congress; obstruction of an attempt to obstruct an official proceeding, such as refusing to order the National Guard or take action to stop the violent January 6, 2021 insurrection; and conspiracy against rights, meaning the rights of voters to a fair and free election. Judge Tanya Chutkan chose a middle ground for a trial date that is 2 months later than the January 2024 date that Special Prosecutor Jack Smith sought, but far earlier than the April 2026 date that Trump's attorney requested, which would have been after the election, and were Trump to win, after he would have taken office. Chutkan rejected the Justice Department's date as too soon to allow Trump's defense adequate time to review materials and ready their defense. But, she added, while Mr. Trump has a right to prepare, the public has a right to prompt and efficient resolution of this matter. Now, as for the trial impeding Trump's ability to attend campaign events, Judge Chutkan made clear he wouldn't be treated the same as any ordinary criminal defendant, noting that if a professional athlete were on trial, quote, it would be inappropriate to set a trial date to accommodate her schedule, unquote. Trump's lawyer, John Lauro, objected that the March 4, 2024 date would violate his right to due process. But the judge noted that Trump has known of the investigation for over a year, that many of the documents were already available to his legal team, and she suggested that Trump's legal team has inflated the amount of evidence needed to be reviewed. Special Prosecutor Smith, in court filings, has argued that an early trial date in the case to be held in Washington, D.C. would vindicate the public's strong interest in a speedy trial. This is one of four cases pending against Trump for criminal charges. He and 18 co-defendants are slated to be arraigned September 6th in Fulton County, Georgia, on state charges, where Trump was arrested last week, had his mugshot taken, and was released on $250,000 bail. Fani Willis, the Atlanta prosecutor in that Georgia case, had earlier asked a judge there to schedule her case for March 4th, the very same date that the federal prosecution in Washington, D.C. is now set to begin. It remains to be seen when Trump's trial in Georgia will be scheduled, which accuses Trump and the 18 co-conspirators of racketeering in a complex plan that involved fake electors, tampering with voting machines, and allegedly pressuring state election officials in Georgia and other states to alter the election outcome. The two other cases are a federal case in Florida with 37 counts related to retention and misuse of classified documents, and a New York State case over alleged hush money payments to a porn star. Trump, on social media and in his public statements, has lashed out at prosecutors in all four cases, each of which was brought after four separate grand juries found evidence sufficient for indictment. Trump has previously called Judge Chutkan biased and unfair. More concerning to prosecutors, he posted that he would be coming after anyone who goes after him, after being warned not to post anything that could be construed as threatening to witnesses. A protective order was granted, limiting Trump's access to sensitive documents and grand jurors' identities, or to make any remarks that could have a chilling effect on witnesses. Chutkan has previously said that if anyone makes inflammatory statements about the case, she would be inclined to move more quickly to trial to prevent any intimidation of witnesses or contamination of the jury pool. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Former El Cajon Councilman Ben Colosio and his wife, Jessica, have been found guilty on four counts each of contempt of court in a civil defamation case won by attorney Lena Chari. But after they repeatedly failed to disclose their assets to enable Chari to be paid, Ben and Jessica Colosio have been ordered to report to San Diego Superior Court on September 1st to begin serving an 8-day jail sentence. The judge also ordered them to pay fines of $1,000 apiece for each count. The case was filed back in 2017, a year after Colosio was elected. Originally, it was part of a broader defamation case with several other defendants who settled their cases, but Chari refused to settle and ultimately won her case. Colosio was found by the court to have falsely claimed Chari had sex in public places in retaliation after she sued him over a vehicle in his car wash business crashed into Chari's property next door. The other plaintiffs included a Miss Middle East beauty pageant contestant who accused Colosio of superimposing her face on someone else's nude body in social media posts. Another contestant in the pageant, run by Colosio's now-defunct Chamber of Commerce, claims he offered to trade sex for the crown. A third plaintiff, a taco shop owner who refused to let Colosio post campaign signs on his property, claimed Colosio retaliated by posting a fake poll rating the taco shop the worst in El Cajon, but that all the votes were made by aliases Colosio set up online. Colosio resigned off the El Cajon City Council in 2019, the day after the settlement was announced. But Chari won her suit and a court ordered the Colosios to pay damages. She sought to collect the money they owed her by conducting a series of judgment debtor examinations where the Colosios were supposed to answer questions on record about their financial assets. Chari told East County Magazine, "Usually one of those is necessary. In this case, we had over 15. That is because the Colosios refused to answer our questions related to their finances, refused to produce account statements they were required to bring." She said the Colosios also claimed some assets had disappeared or that they couldn't find their records. Then Chari filed an order asking the court to find the Colosios criminally guilty of contempt in the civil case, a tool that attorney Chari says is rarely, if ever, used. in a civil case, but the judge concluded that the Colossos' failure to fulfill the requirements of the judgment justified finding them guilty on criminal counts and ordering them both incarcerated. The Colossos are currently living in Spruce Pine, North Carolina, according to documents filed by their attorney, Kevin Lemieux. Ben Colosso is working as a chef at Smithmore Castle, a bed and breakfast inn in North Carolina, according to his LinkedIn page and an article published by Business Insider. The court originally ordered the Colossos to surrender to begin their sentence on August 18th. However, the Colossos obtained a postponement while the judge considered a motion to delay serving time until March 2024 because, according to their legal filings, Jessica Colosso is pregnant and due to deliver in November. Jessica Colosso submitted a signed declaration from a medical provider advising her to avoid travel until 3 months after the birth of their child. A filing by the Colossos' attorney claimed Jessica would potentially cause harm to her unborn baby or to herself if she were to engage in a cross-country flight at this point in her pregnancy. However, Jari submitted evidence that the Colossos traveled to San Diego in June and July to attend parties. Judge Kenneth Medell, in an August 24th ex parte emergency hearing that the Colossos did not attend in person, ruled against their request to delay their sentence and ordered them to return to San Diego September 1st to begin serving their jail sentence. He noted that the couple had many prior opportunities through the years to provide the financial documents sought by Chari to enable her to collect on a judgment issued against the couple. The message was, "You will suffer the consequences," Judge Medell stated. The contempt charges are not the first criminal convictions for Ben Colosso. He was previously found guilty on a criminal count of workman's compensation fraud before his election to the El Cajon City Council. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Lemon Grove Mayor Raquel Vasquez delivered her State of the City address, highlighting what the City Council and staff have accomplished this past year and what is planned moving forward for the City of Lemon Grove. The mayor stated that we have repeatedly demonstrated that when our elected leaders work in unison, this unity translates into tangible, substantial results. Tangible results include making street repairs a priority and bringing new events such as Trunk or Treat and an Earth Day celebration. Mayor Vasquez also spoke about the city's Gifty program, in which 33 Lemon Grove businesses participated in a gift card program that initially gave a buy one gift card, get one free promotion. That later was scaled back in round three of the program to a buy one, get one half off version. Vasquez said that with this program, the city was able to inject $400,000 into a local economy. With funds from the Biden administration's American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA, a program designated to help cities rebound after COVID-19. Other improvements cited by the mayor were the addition by the city of a designated motorcycle police officer to enhance street safety and successful completion of the sidewalk master plan and pavement management plan. In addition, $1.2 million in ARPA funds were allocated to repair streets, making a total of a $3.5 million investment. Federal grant funds are being used to repair a public storm drain and meet a backlog of sidewalk repairs. The city recently lost a lawsuit by two residents over sinkholes on their property created by a failing storm drain. The mayor praised city staff, stating, "Even though they are small, they are mighty, and they go above and beyond for the residents we proudly serve." Looking to the future, the mayor was optimistic that council and staff would increase street repairs and walkability with the Connect Main Street project that was approved back in 2016. The mayor also spoke about the city's plan to put a sales tax increase on next year's ballot to create the future we envision for this community and to look for new sources of revenue. Vasquez also says that a committee has been formed to recommend further action on the sales tax initiative. The city will soon receive a new state-of-the-art fire truck, as well as a bicycle patrol through the Sheriff Department, thanks to a grant. Lemon Grove has joined forces with other East County cities to tackle the need for more emergency shelters in the region after the city's homeless population doubled from 31 to 60 over the past year. Vasquez mentioned the need for unity several times, though unity has been a challenge for the current council members, with one member filing a restraining order against another, who also faced allegations of harassing a staff member, and a censure motion that was later dropped. Mayor Vasquez concluded, "The triumph of our community hinges upon our unity and a shared vision for a prosperous Lemon Grove. Let's unite, making our visions a reality." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
As extreme heat records fall across the West and strain the power grid, San Diego Gas and Electric is piloting a new clean tech innovation known as a virtual power plant, or VPP. It should reduce energy demand and put electricity back on the grid during peak hours, all through leveraging the capabilities of customer-owned smart thermostats, rooftop solar, energy storage, and other connected resources such as water pumps. Unlike a traditional power plant, a virtual power plant does not rely on a physical facility to generate electricity for the grid to distribute to homes and businesses. Instead, a VPP uses advanced software to aggregate and coordinate functions of a collection of small-scale, decentralized resources at customers' homes and businesses to meet grid needs. A VPP network can comprise a wide range of devices and resources, everything from home appliances, such as electric vehicles and chargers, to heating and air conditioning equipment and solar plus battery energy storage systems. Software programs run VPPs in concert with grid operations, dispatch communication signals to devices in the VPP network to either power down or discharge electricity from existing resources back to the grid. SDG&E Chief Commercial Officer Miguel Romero says, "The beauty of a virtual power plant is it can leverage existing resources to provide significant grid reliability benefits with zero incremental emissions. When hundreds or thousands of businesses or homes are connected to a VPP and their resources are flexibly managed to charge or discharge electrons, they can help keep the lights on during hot summer days," he adds. In August, as temperatures soared, SDG&E did deploy its VPP pilot three times to support the grid during peak demand periods. Connected devices functioned as expected, according to the utility. Because of how well the pilot project has performed, SDG&E is considering expanding that program to other areas in the future. Now, SDG&E's VPP pilot is different from most others because of the diversity of devices it has integrated into its centralized system. Most VPPs typically involved only one brand or one type of device, such as battery energy storage. SDG&E's involves multiple brands and types of devices, including smart thermostats, well water controllers, and battery energy storage systems. Now, where is the pilot taking place? In Shelter Valley, a remote community right here in San Diego's East County, about an hour and a half drive from central San Diego. Participants in the pilot in Shelter Valley include single-family homes with existing rooftop solar and the Shelter Valley Community Center, which serves as a resource center for the community during emergencies. The center gets free installation of two batteries on site. Shelter Valley Community Center Board President Steve Bassett believes the system will better prepare the community for emergencies. He says, "We can use this equipment to maintain a place for people if the power goes off and keep the center cool, and hope we can provide food if needed for our community residents." When VPP participants receive a message about the potential for their devices to be turned off or to discharge electricity to support the grid, they can opt out for certain devices, except not battery storage. So far, the opt-out rate has been very low, according to SDG&E. The pilot came online last December, and it will run through December. Since the start of that pilot, the VPP has been tested through 17 simulated demand response events. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Summer heat can interfere with our power supply. Hot weather can drive up energy demands, often to power air conditioners, which can overload your electrical grid and lead to power outages. Here are some tips to prepare for outages. Have flashlights for every family member. Stock up on non-perishable food and water. Keep your cell phone fully charged and consider buying a solar-powered charger. Have a power strip with surge protector for your computer and other major devices. If possible, unplug electronic devices to avoid damage from electrical surges once power is restored. Have an alternative plan to refrigerate medications, such as an ice chest. If you use a medical device that relies on electricity, contact SDG&E for help. Check the county's Cool Zones site to find air-conditioned sites near you. Consider getting a generator and know how to use it safely. If an outage occurs, keep freezers and refrigerators closed. A refrigerator will keep food safely cold for about 4 hours. A full freezer may keep foods frozen for up to 48 hours. Use a cooler with ice for prolonged outages. Test food with a food thermometer. If the temperature reaches 40 degrees or more, throw it out. Never use outdoor appliances, such as camp stoves or charcoal grills, inside for cooking or heating, since these can cause carbon monoxide poisoning indoors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
The San Diego Animal Sanctuary and Farm in Alpine has a new organic garden and is offering its harvest for sale to the public. Funds earned from garden sales will go directly to care for animals at the nonprofit sanctuary. Produce includes lettuce, carrots, radishes, kale, squash, zucchini, chard, and more, harvested daily. Besides shopping for produce, visitors can opt to support the sanctuary with a tour to view over 200 domesticated livestock and exotic animals from around the world, as well as feed livestock, chickens, and ducks. The sanctuary and farm has shady spots and misters to cool off on warm summer days. To learn more, visit sanctuaryandfarm.org. Reporting from Alpine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host,
Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
I'm Jonathan Getz with this week's Destination East County. As summer draws to a close and autumn fast approaches, some of East County's most anticipated events of the year are coming up, including the Barona and Saquon powwows and the Borrego Days Desert Festival. There are also attractions on stage indoors, including Crystal Gale in concert and comic Paula Poundstone performing. So stay tuned for details on all of these events. For more than half a century, the Barona Band of Mission Indians has been hosting its powwow, a traditional gathering attracting Native American tribal members from across North America. The 51st annual Barona Powwow features competitions in tribal dancing and drumming. It will be held September 1st through 3rd, on the Barona Reservation at the Barona Sports Complex, located at 1095 Barona Road in Lakeside. The event also includes vendors with Native American crafts, clothing, jewelry, artwork, and more, as well as food and beverages available for purchase. Grand entry processionals will be held at 8 p.m. Friday and at both 2 and 8 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. For a full schedule of events, visit the Barona Powwows Facebook page. The 2023 Sequon Powwow will be held September 8th through the 10th at the Sequon Resort in El Cajon. The annual celebration will feature tribal dancing contests each day, as well as bird singing competitions on September 9th. Other activities include peon games at dusk, traditional Native American arts and crafts vendors, and refreshments. For more information, visit the Sequon Powwow page on Facebook. Country music legend Crystal Gayle will perform at Sequon's Live and Up Close Theater on Saturday, September 9th at 8 p.m. Gayle was inducted into the Grand Ole Opry in 2017 by her sister, Loretta Lynn. Her signature songs include Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue, You've Been Talking in Your Sleep, When I Dream, Half the Way, and her duet with Eddie Rabbit, Just You and I. Gayle was released over 20 number one hits and has been awarded numerous times by the Grammys, the Country Music Association, the Academy of Country Music, the American Music Awards, and the American Music Operators Association, and she has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. For tickets, visit sequon.com. Paula Poundstone will be performing at the Magnolia in El Cajon on Friday, September 29th at 6:30 p.m. The iconic comedian has starred in several HBO specials, hosts a weekly comedy podcast, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and is a panelist on NPR's comedy news quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Poundstone was the first female comic to perform stand-up comedy at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Her HBO special, Cats, Cops, and Stuff, marked the first time a female comedian won Best Comedy Special in the Cable Ace Awards. For tickets, visit concerts.livenation.com. The 57th annual Borrego Days Desert Festival, produced by the Borrego Chamber of Commerce, will be held October 21st and 22nd at Christmas Circle Community Park in Borrego Springs. The festival includes live musical entertainment, art exhibits, a kids' zone, food vendors, artisans, a beer garden, a car show, and more. For details, visit borregodays.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. We'll have a few national news stories from Public News Service, and then with Halloween coming up, we'll be re-airing one of our Best of East County episodes, our bookshelf interview with Raina Menashe, the author of Spirit of Shy Moon Lake.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
This is a dark day in Jacksonville's history. Any loss of life is tragic, but the hate that motivated the shooter's killing spree adds an additional layer of heartbreak.
Jacksonville, Florida Sheriff T.K. Waters says a 21-year-old white gunman used a legally purchased handgun and an AR-15-style rifle to kill three black people there Saturday. Waters says the killer left behind writings that show a disgusting ideology of hate. The Federal Department of Justice has opened a civil rights investigation. Racism and gun violence were both addressed by speakers marking the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington. Martin Luther King III told the thousands of people gathered at the Lincoln Memorial that it takes only a few good people to bring about change.
Dad would probably say, now is the time. We must preserve, protect, and expand democracy. We must ensure that voting rights is protected for all people.
Organizers say the event can serve as a rededication to civil rights in the face of a backlash. They cited efforts to rewrite Black history in the public schools, restrictive voting legislation, and the Supreme Court's ending affirmative action in higher education. Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy calls the Department of Education the head of the snake and wants to shut it down.
Allow any parent to choose where they send their kids to school. End the teachers' unions at the local level to allow public schools to compete.
Many Republicans at the state and federal level are pushing for the use of public tax dollars to pay for private and religious schooling. Conservatives say they plan to make what they call parental rights a top issue in the 2024 election. Youth climate activists nationwide want to put the right to a clean and healthy environment in their state's constitutions. That includes Maine, where student Audrey Huffnagel says it's basic to how people will live in the future.
And including it in the Constitution really just sets this baseline of, like, this is a fundamental right on par with the right to freedom of speech.
So-called green amendments are advancing in 9 states. Activists say they're drawing inspiration from a landmark legal decision out of Montana, which found the state was violating residents' environmental rights by promoting the use of fossil fuels. In Ohio, the GOP-controlled ballot board has altered the language for a proposed amendment to enshrine the right to abortion in the state's constitution. Secretary of State Frank LaRose cast the swing vote to approve the text, which now includes the phrase, unborn child.
This is 100% about keeping a radical pro-abortion amendment out of our Constitution. The left wants to jam it in there this coming November.
Critics call the text misleading and say Republicans are working to confuse voters when they see the language this fall. Several pro-choice ballot initiatives have won in red states since Roe was overturned. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Biden administration has launched an application site for a new student loan repayment plan called the SAVE Plan, or Saving on Evaluable Education Plan. Borrowers can sign up and learn details at studentaid.gov. This is a revised plan after an earlier effort to forgive student loans was blocked by the Supreme Court, though Republicans have also filed a challenge to the new plan. The new SAVE plan calculates repayment based on the borrower's income family size. According to the White House fact sheet, it will cut many borrowers' monthly payments to zero, save others around $1,000 a year, and prevent balances from growing because of unpaid interest. It will also forgive some loans early for certain borrowers. The benefits of the SAVE plan will be particularly critical for low and middle income borrowers, community college students, and borrowers who work in public service. The plan struck down by the High Court's conservative majority was far more sweeping. It would have provided relief to around 40 million borrowers for people earning below a certain income, of whom 20 million people would have had loans forgiven. But the court ruled that a president could not unilaterally make such changes and that such changes would require either action by Congress or by the Secretary of Education, who could modify existing provisions of the Education Act. The new regulations announced by the Department of Education are narrower in scope, providing forgiveness of about $40 billion in loans, less than a tenth of the $430 billion that the earlier plan sought to provide. Conservative Republican groups have filed a new challenge, asking a federal court in Michigan to block Biden's newly announced plan. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Jonathan Getz.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment.
This is Miriam Raftery, host of the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I'm also guest hosting Bookshelf because my guest today is Raina Menashe, our longtime host of Bookshelf. Raina's fiction has been honored by organizations such as the San Diego Writers and Editors Guild, San Diego Book and Writing Awards, and the Southern California Writers Conference. Her first novel, Twice Begun, and her second novel, Silent Bird, were both finalists in the 2012 and 2013 San Diego Book Awards. And her newest novel, a paranormal suspense titled The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake, was released in spring 2021. Her first children's book, The House That Sneezed, will be released early next year. She is currently writing Thrice Begun, the sequel and prequel to Twice Begun. Her website, randomandashy.com, includes blogs on psychology and wellness, writing, and other social commentary. Also a licensed clinical social worker, Randa Menashe has taught psychology and counseling at Southern California universities, as well as therapeutic techniques to human service professionals. In addition, she's a workshop leader at the Southern California Writers Conference in San Diego and Irvine. She created a class called Character Therapy, and you're the shrink. I love that. And it's alive to emphasize the joyful creativity of exploring therapeutic exercises with a fictional character. Rana has served as vice president of the Kronos Theater Group, and she often uses dramatic as well as therapeutic techniques in her creative work. And of course, as host of our bookshelf right here on East County Magazine's radio show in San Diego, Rana interviews local authors and sometimes national ones about their creative processes. And you can find more about her at her website, ranamenashe.com, and that's spelled ReinaMenashe.com. Rana, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. It's so much fun to be on my own show.
Yeah, it's different, isn't it, being the interviewee instead of the interviewer?
It feels a little strange.
Yeah. I've got to ask, switching from prior genres, and you're really noted for crossing genres in your books that really defy definition. How difficult was it to switch from psychological romance novels that dealt with some heavy subjects such as addiction and recovering from different traumas into writing paranormal suspense?
Well, in some ways, I see it as consistent because in a way, the suspense book really has a lot to do with trauma. And the stories that we tell to comfort ourselves, to soothe ourselves after a trauma, the different paths we choose or don't choose, how we heal or don't heal. I'm always doing this psychological thing, but I put it in a different kind of story. I think I've always wanted to write something scary. Scary in the more paranormal sense. And I've been hinting in that direction. And so I decided to just kind of plunge in and do it. And it was very different writing this book.
Well, I've read Spirit of Shy Moon Lake. I enjoyed it, even though it did keep me up all night. It is a page.
Oh, yay.
So you did your job. Yeah. Where did you dream up your ideas for this creative book, Rana, in which people are drawn to this beautiful but perilous Shy Moon Lake and the secrets from the past that it holds?
And it started with an idea. What if you were in a place where your karma, so to speak, what you sow, you know, what you reap, you sow, comes back at you really quickly, where you get what you deserve or you don't get what you don't deserve, or at least people think that's what happens. And then I sort of, you know, it just meanders off. I mean, this book took about a decade to write. And in that process, it changed quite a bit. But it had a lot to do with what people believe, again, what they tell themselves, how we often don't know what's true, what's not true.
Interesting. What was the inspiration for your main character, Jess McCourtney, and for that matter, any of the other key characters that are so compelling in this book, Rana?
Well, you know, sometimes people have always asked me that, especially, well, in my former books as well. And sometimes they think it's me because I often write in the first person.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're all like bits and pieces of me. It's like one big salad or a collage. I think Jess has parts of me for sure. Raising a small boy, the pains, traumas, and incredible joys of motherhood are in there. What it's like to experience betrayal is in there. You know, these are things that everyone experiences, or not everyone, but many people experience. The main character, Charlie McCourtney, her husband, he's a poet. And I think I explored a lot about artists there. Again, what they tell themselves, the stories they tell themselves, how they comfort themselves, how they cope with life's dilemmas and mistakes. Now, the other sort of the residents of the town, I really just had plain romping fun with that. I wanted to make them superstitious, but I wanted to create superstitions and beliefs that don't currently exist. I didn't want to trod on anyone's beliefs or, you know, traditions. I just sort of made up my own. So the whole thing is imagination from beginning to end. But again, why do people believe what they believe?
Who knows? Yeah, fascinating psychological angles in this. So you actually finished writing and marketing the book in the middle of a global pandemic and lockdown. How challenging was that? Or maybe it was the opposite. Maybe you found you had a lot of time on your hands all of a sudden.
Well, I had already written it and I had done most of the editing, final editing, for a long time, actually. And what the pandemic did is when it started, it just kind of took the oomph out of me. I had two book launches, two or three that I canceled because I didn't want to do them virtually. Virtual launchings are fine. It's just that I wanted to read this aloud, you know, live.
So you were saying it just sort of took the oomph out of things. In what ways?
I had all this excited preparation that I had to change. So there were live book launches that I had to cancel. And also, I have to say, I got a little depressed, like lots of people, you know, with the shutdown.
Sure.
And I guess it took a lot of, it took me longer. It took me longer. I just kind of sat on it for several months. So and then it inspired, of course, other books because you're thinking pandemic themes.
Oh my gosh. Now talk about finding the silver lining there.
Right? Yeah. Not that anyone wants to hear about a pandemic right now.
Did you try any virtual events?
I did. I've gotten used to it. I think we go kicking and screaming into things that we're not used to. I'm a clinician, as you know, in my day job, and I do those meetings virtually.
As we're doing this interview via Zoom right now.
Exactly. So I think now I would do a virtual book launch, but at the time I was still, you know, I wanted to do things live. Yeah. So it was disappointing in that way, but you do end up saving some money during a pandemic if you're still employed. And so use some of those things to revamp my website. You know, as I said, make lemons out of lemonade if you can.
There you go. Raina, can you read an excerpt for us from The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake?
Sure, I would love to. I'm going to take an excerpt that's fairly early on. It's page 23 in the book. And I'll begin where the little boy Jonah, they just moved to Shy Moon Lake, the family, that's Jess, her husband Charlie, and Jonah. And the little boy Jonah was climbing on the balcony right away the second they got to their new house and almost fell and hurt himself. And so the mother is shaken up. This is the scene right afterwards. Mommy, are you mad at me? No, you just scared me, honey. I'm fine now. Sorry I raised my voice. He thought about that and smiled. Yeah, he would forgive me. Big of him. Then he stood on his tippy toes, peering towards the lake. Who's that? Who's who? He pointed. There, in the water. I squinted at the inky blackness, recalling the town legend about long ago lovers drowning. Sorry, honey, it's too dark. You're just seeing tree shadows. There were indeed tree shadows, thrown by starlight, shifting across the dark water like a flutter of insects. Silhouettes of trees appeared suspended between opposing diadems of light. The Milky Way above and its reflection on the waters of Shy Moon Lake below. How thrilling, I thought, to view a night sky containing more than six or seven stars. Against this luminous, scintillating dome, anything seemed possible. Like, I wondered, what would happen to all this beauty if there was an earthquake? Violent quakes had no doubt accompanied the birth of the volcano that now cupped the lake. How many points on the Richter scale could these cottages endure before windows shattered, porches toppled, the land crumbling beneath our feet? Maybe we will need to climb inside that refrigerator. Mrs. Paddock said, Mrs. McCourtney, are you all right? I shook off the unwanted gloom. I might not be as congenitally cheerful as my husband, but I was not usually like this either. Yes, thank you. I'm fine. I'm just tired. It's been a long day. As Charlie rose back up the steps, the upper half of his body hidden behind boxes and bags, a door slammed. A porch light flicked on in the cottage next door. We looked over. A woman with short, darkish hair gazed back at us, her expression flash frozen. "Good evening," I called, waving, happy for the distraction. "We're moving in." She did not reply, just stared. She had to have heard me. The cottages were not that far apart. I stepped to the end of the porch. "My name is Jess. This is my husband, Charlie, and our son, Jonah. We've bought this place and we're moving in right now." Still no response from the lady next door. Was she ill? Disabled? Finally, as if set to a delayed timer, her eyebrows went down and a smile opened up nice and big. "Well, hello. Welcome."
What a marvelous and somewhat chilling piece of foreshadowing that is.
Thank you.
Love it. I've got to ask you about your class, Character Therapy and You're the Shrink, emphasizing, as we've noted, the joyful creativity of exploring therapeutic exercises with a fictional character. Can you tell us a little bit more about that for people who may be interested?
Yes, this class is really, it's really personal. It's like an art project for me. When I was little, I couldn't decide between being a writer and being, say, a psychologist. So basically, I kept going back and forth between the two of them. This class is really putting it all together. I take all these psychological theories that I learned in my master's degree in my profession and look at a character from all these theories, the child development theories. Where did your character get stuck in developmental tasks that causes current behavior? Or looking at defense mechanisms and thought distortions and sort of really looking into these explanations that we've developed to understand your character better if you choose to. Now, do I do that with my characters? I think I do it more on on an informal level. But I also hand out to the people who attend the class, I hand out lots of worksheets so that they can revisit these theories and play with them. Play with your characters. Have fun. This is the sandbox.
Very wise advice. The characters are really what drives a novel, I think, even more than plot. So that begs the question of what are you working on next?
Well, Twice Begun, which was my first novel, has to do about with sort of reinventing yourself after, you know, a huge betrayal, and how sometimes the people that we think are better people don't turn out to be as good as people who have been through very hard times and have risen above.
Yeah.
There is a house in that book, it's her great aunt's house in Coronado, that was a home for hysterical women during World War II. And a lot of readers said, "Man, I wanted to learn more about that house. And when are you going to write the sequel to the book? I want to know what happens to this former social worker who gets involved with a person who's a recovering addict or former client," which is taboo. Anyway, so yeah. I decided to write this sequel and prequel. Uh-huh. So it goes into the great aunt's youth in this house, as well as, so that's called Thrice Begun. I'm about, you know, halfway, maybe three quarters of the way through that. And then there's a children's story called The House That Sneezed that is really four drawings. I'm not doing the drawings, but it's very near completion. So that one also has psychological themes, basically to help little kids deal with grief by using a metaphor of the house that's not feeling well.
And very timely right now with a pandemic that killed 700,000 Americans as we speak.
I could say that that book was inspired by when I worked with little kids and families, and I was looking for that book to use with the children that I worked with, and I couldn't find it. So I finally said, okay, well, let's create it.
So it's really filling an important need. Well, Raina, you're just so versatile, and I want to thank you today. We are out of time, but I want to thank you for coming on the show today and sharing all of your marvelous literary knowledge with us. Readers, you can find more about Raina Menashe and her books at reinasche.com, and that's spelled reinasche.com.
It was a pleasure, Miriam. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. You've been listening to the Bookshelf segment on East County Magazine's radio show on KNSJ, bringing you news about local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
A proposal to allow betting on which political party will control Congress is drawing opposition from pro-democracy groups and from a coalition of progressive senators. The New York trading company Kalshi has asked the Commodity Futures Trading Commission for approval to offer derivatives trading on so-called event contracts, specifically on control of Congress. Stephen Spaulding with the group Common Cause says gambling on elections is bad for democracy.
You can imagine wealthy gamblers could make significant money by exploiting disinformation to influence an electoral outcome that would protect the bettor's bottom line. And this, again, opens up a significant risk to the perception that the winners and losers of an election are not determined by voters, but by those who stand to gain financially.
Backers of the proposal say it would allow companies to hedge against certain outcomes, limiting risk. Eliezer Mishori, Kalshi's chief regulatory officer, has argued that betting on elections is already allowed overseas and suggests this proposal would give the federal government oversight powers. Spaulding notes, the Citizens United Supreme Court decision allowed companies to spend unlimited money on elections and calls betting on elections a profound threat to democracy.
You can imagine a situation where a entity places an enormous wager on the outcome of an election and also funnels resources through super PACs or other dark money vehicles to influence the outcome of an election. And that is inherently, we think, anti-democratic.
Both Common Cause and some U.S. senators, including California's Dianne Feinstein, submitted letters of opposition during the public comment period, which ended in July. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission is expected to make a decision by September 21st. Support for this reporting was provided by Carnegie Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The city of El Cajon is considering an expansive new farmers market called Downtown Market Nights. If approved, it would be larger in scope than other farmers markets across the county. At the City Council meeting in early August, the city's marketing and engagement manager, Chris Berg, gave a presentation on the proposed market, which could include not only farmers, fresh flowers, and artisan foods, but also a beer garden, 3 concert stages with live music, including bands with local followings, as well as barbecues and East County restaurants serving up foods for visitors to savor. Several streets would be shut down to traffic weekly for the event, which would have separate areas for foods and artisans as well as local bands, bringing not only shoppers but those seeking to enjoy nightlife in downtown El Cajon. Berg says it's a fun way to bring a lot of activity to downtown and elevate our downtown. He showed examples of other cities, such as San Luis Obispo, which has a similar marketplace with weekly street closures, drawing 6,000 visitors in peak months and attracting people from neighboring communities. Another example is the 626 Night Market. That's an Asian-themed market in Arcadia in northeast L.A., which has been around for over a decade and even has a traveling roadshow. The third example is Oceanside's Sunset Market, which started in 2007. Berg said he lived in Oceanside at the time and saw a positive transition, as this and other events helped bring in better businesses to redevelop that community. For the proposed El Cajon event, Berg recommends Thursday nights to minimize conflicts with other farmers' markets and the city's existing car shows and outdoor concerts. East County Market Nights could attract 275,000 community members from El Cajon and neighboring cities. It would run from April through October from 5 to 9 p.m. The city council members voiced excitement about the proposal. Councilmember Michelle Metchell called it wonderful and something that we need. She approved of going big. Councilmember Steve Goble said this is what we've been working on for years to get more people into downtown. And Councilman Phil Ortiz called the idea fantastic, noting that El Cajon's downtown has many areas to accommodate large events that most other East County cities lack. City Manager Graham Mitchell said staff will bring back a formal package later for the council to approve in the near future. Reporting for East County Magazine from El Cajon, this is Miriam Raftery.
The abortion drug, mifepristone, may soon be illegal nationwide in many circumstances, even in states where abortion remains legal. The FDA first approved the medication in 2000, then in 2016, and expanded its authorization to allow its use for up to 10 weeks of pregnancy. But now a 3-judge panel on the conservative Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Louisiana has ruled that it was unlawful for the FDA to allow mifepristone to be used later in pregnancy or mailed directly to patients or prescribed by a medical professional other than a doctor. 2 of those judges were appointed by Donald Trump. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs denounced the court's ruling. Times of San Diego reports. Jacobs says, right-wing Republicans know they can't win at the ballot box, so they've chosen to weaponize the courts and ignore decades of precedent and science to enact their dystopian anti-abortion agenda. The San Diego Democrat adds, while mifepristone remains safe, effective, and for now widely available, this is the latest gross attack on our bodies and our freedom. We won't stop fighting for our fundamental rights and for abortion access to be legal, affordable, accessible, and stigma-free for everyone. The judges in Louisiana were reviewing an order in April by a Texas judge to completely ban use of mifepristone pending appeal, an order which the Texas judge said he would likely make permanent. Neither the Texas nor the Louisiana ruling will take effect until the Supreme Court reviews them, which could occur in its upcoming term from October to June. But with the High Court's conservative majority, it appears likely that women's access to mifepristone could soon be restricted nationwide or even banned after the justices issue a ruling. California has been buying up supplies of the drug in case it is ultimately banned. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Priebel, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.